any time. Shall I hand over to you, Ma'am Jisa? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Let me first start by apologizing for being late. Somebody bumped me from the back, so I had to forget about the parliamentary process and just take the details, otherwise the insurance wasn't going to pay me. Pardon? The insurance. Because somebody bumped me from the back when I was driving to the airport, just before the airport, so... Oh, okay. And my apologies for getting here late. Maybe secondly, I need to highlight the point that the presentation wouldn't be much different from what Mr. Apane presented in the last event, because it's almost a month. And at that stage, I mean, that was just after the State of the Nation address. And maybe the slight difference would be on the numbers in terms of the actual installations and like the parallel processes in terms of what we're doing in relation to the Green Economy Accord that was signed late last year.
But you will give a little bit of more detail here and there.
Yes.
Because we're concentrating on solar water heater rollout now.
Yeah.
Not putting it as part of other issues.
Yeah, the first slide basically is just to say the program which I'm enrolled out focusing on both the tariff and the fiscal funded project, and it was slow in the beginning, but we must confirm that now it has taken, a steep curve in terms of the interest that has been shown in the market. You would recall that at the time when the President gave the State of the Nation address, he confirmed that so far the country has been, has managed to achieve the actual installation to the tune of 220 units. And at that stage, it didn't include the February and March status reports on the program. So you will notice the difference on how far since the State of the Nation address and now. In terms of the department's strategic plan, this is aligned to the outcome on demand side energy efficiency and diversified energy mix program. And within the 2011-2012 financial year, we had a baseline of 55,000 units, and the target to be met was 250,041 units. And due to the delays or challenges that we had in finalizing the installations within the 2010-2011 rollout, there was an overlap from those municipalities where the program was being rolled out. And in the municipalities, with the rollout was within the Schedule 7 in terms of DORA, where ESCOM is the implementing agent. And the municipalities that were in 2010-2011, we're talking of Naledi, Tswane, and Solplaki municipalities. Basically, this table is just to confirm the allocated funds versus the planned installation and how far did it go. Within the Naledi municipality, we had Freiburg and Stella as the area where the actual installation was taking place, and the allocated funds, we were talking about 54,450,000, with the planned units being 7,837. On Naledi, we could only install 1,362. The project could not be completed. I will get to the details in terms of what the challenges were. And within Solplaki and Tswane, the planned installation were completed. Within Solplaki, we managed to achieve 7,837, and in Tswane, 15,094 as it was planned. And it also highlights how much of energy was saved through the rollout in this area. On job creation within the fiscal allocated resources, within Solplaki, 150% were appointed, Naledi only 9, as it would be in line with why we couldn't even complete the the project as it was planned, and within 20, we're talking about 130 persons which were, I mean, who were appointed during the program. In July 2011, we were alerted about the challenges when it comes to water quality within Naledi municipalities. And the challenges were outlined as, like, some of the beneficiaries had no water connected directly to the household, and this is one of the fundamental requirements for solar water installation. And in some cases, you would find that we experience bed roof structures or old pipes that cannot be tapped into, or hard water. The prevalence of hard water could have severe impact on the direct functionality of solar water heater or its lifespan. So this led to Naledi municipality later confirming the hard water, and like the project could not continue, because if we would have continued, it would have been a waste, because those solar water heaters wouldn't work, I mean, that long. And within that process, there were two solutions that were presented before a decision to stop the project was taken on how to deal with the challenges. On solution one, is either we would have had to remove calcium and iron mass, which was found to be, I mean, in high percentages or quantity within the water quality. And solution two, we were to treat water chemically through reverse osmosis. Then we went to the cost breakdown on each of those solutions that were presented to us. On solution one, it came to a total cost of 9,365,215,000, which wasn't part of the allocated funds. We had to source this money somewhere else. And maintenance for solution one included, like, for example, the filter would need to be changed as soon as it's visibly blocked, or the replacement depends on the solids present in the raw feed, meaning that if there is too much solids, you may have to, I mean, change the filter now and then, but in most cases it would be mostly within a period of 6 months. And going further in terms of the cost calculation, for the units that were planned, 7,837, it meant in every 6 months we would have had to part with almost 12 million. After analyzing this, it was clear that because there is no additional budget, it won't be possible to proceed with the project. On solution two, on the reverse osmosis as another option, also it created a challenge, because that meant that the water had to be treated at the main reservoir, not only focusing on only the areas where the actual installation was done. So if we were to focus on the main reservoir, we had to calculate that in terms of daily consumption. If you look at the main reservoir, it wasn't only supplying Stella and Freiberg, it included other areas, and the cost in terms of the remedial cost came to 88,400,000, which could not be sourced anyway. So it also came to the same conclusion, that because there is no additional fund and it would be too costly also to proceed with the project, then the project was stopped. On the basis that the recommendations, we took into account that there were the solar water heaters units were already purchased for that area. So we went back in terms of the requests that the department received from the municipalities during the course of the year. In one of those, we had Maluja Pofing, which had already engaged the department, and they had a business plan that was already approved. Then we chose Maluja Pofing as the place where the area where the project would be moved to. So the units that were already purchased were moved to Maluja Pofu. But like, as being cautious enough, we wanted to confirm that the water quality or the challenges that were, I mean, we experienced in the previous area of Naledi are not as well experienced there. We had to carry out a feasibility study, which is currently in progress. On the 2011 and 2012 fiscal update, we had three municipalities as well: Emfuleni, which is Sidibeng, we had Musena and Umsobombu, two municipalities were allocated 54,400,000 under Schedule 7 of DORA and 60,000,000 for Umsobombu under Schedule 6. And mostly, if you look at our planning processes, our financial year starts in April, while the financial year for the municipality starts in July. So most of the first and second quarter, while the municipality is concentrating more on finalizing, working towards their financial year, preparing for their beginning of the financial year, we focus more on the business plans as well as the contracts in terms of the delivery. So in all those municipalities, a feasibility study had to be undertaken. And in the three municipalities, two have already started with their feasibility study. There is a delay in terms of the Imfuleni municipality, but it has been confirmed that they would be undertaking the feasibility study themselves as compared to the other two municipalities where service providers have been confirmed. In the next update on progress on the rollout, we would be in a position to confirm the actual installation as well as the outcomes of the feasibility study as indicated. And on these, it gives you the installations to date. You would note that in terms of the provincial spread or installations, there are provinces that are still, showing to be very low. If you look at Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Northwest, these are the provinces that are not picking up as it would have been anticipated. One of the things that made us to go back or reflect on what could be the cause, one of the things is we realize that these are the provinces that have even the rural setup as well. Maybe we need to beef up our campaign or awareness creation within these provinces. Going forward, it means that some of these things we need to strengthen where we have identified the weaknesses. And on the actual numbers, the installation to date, in terms of the low pressure systems under the rebate program, we have 171,730. Under the fiscal allocation, we have got 24,293, which makes a total of 196,023. On the high-pressure system, which is under the rebate only, we have got 48,941, with a total to date of 244,964, which is currently falling a bit short of what our initial, our target for the year is. If you, if I go back to the first slide, I indicated that in terms of our strategic plan, the target for the last financial year was 250,41 units. So we are more or less a bit low, but we had hoped that we would be able to reach the target, taking into account that there are other programs that are being rolled out across the country, like, for example, towards the... During the preparation of COP, we had other programs in terms of the rollout on solar water heaters. So reports are still outstanding due to the verification process. We had one program within Ilembe municipality where the solar water heaters were rolled out in clinics and schools. So we're still awaiting a report from the United Nations Industrial Development Organization in that regard, which we hope that it will take the number up a bit. And on this, the jobs that were created through the rebate program, in terms of the suppliers and distributors, it was confirmed that within the 24 suppliers, 640 jobs were created, and then in the distributors line, 1,462. And like I must confirm that the final number of job creation will be provided once the registration of suppliers and distributors is finalized. Eskom is currently in the process of doing that. And on the standard offer model, I just need to confirm that the implementation plan in terms of how the standard offer model would be implemented has been finalized or completed. We're still in discussion with National Treasury in terms of piloting the standard offer within the current allocation, which a decision has not yet been taken. And this is just, an outline in terms of what the standard offer model is all about. And this gives a background in terms of the funding requirements for the rollout. In terms of the total funding required for the water heating units, the cost installed units also would include the interest rate based on the lending percentage. And it would inform the source of funding in terms of commercial debt and concessionary debt, which could be, paid back through a pool of funding, from the owner, from the fiscal, from the carbon credit, MOPD, as well as the grant. So on the localization part of it, here we're just saying the Green Economy Accord was signed late last year in November 2011. There were commitments made between government, business, organized labor, and community. I'll just touch on a few of those commitments, particularly because they relate to localization on the solar water heating program. One, there was a commitment in terms of the target that has already been set of 1 million by 2014. In order to achieve the target, it will require financing, enterprise development, training, policy coordinated across stakeholders, business committed to working with government to develop, establish, and then publish a sustainable funding plan to support the installation of 1 million solar water heating systems. This was on the realization that if indeed this sector has been identified as a potential for job creation, we need to be working together along the value chain. Not only government can do it alone, hence business was brought on board through the NetLeg process. One of the commitments was to improve localization of the components. All parties commit to drive the increased localization of the components on the solar water heating program. I will at a later stage touch on progress in terms of what DTI and IDC has already started doing in relation to looking at the designation study. I'll give progress in that regard. And also, the Green Economy Accord was committing to secure support from the industry for replace units. Like at the moment, we are still deliberating in terms of how do we make sure that when users are replacing their geysers, they don't go back to electricity or they have got the dual system in terms of factoring in the solar geysers as well. So these are some of the commitments made through the Green Economy Accord. And the last one was to promote the marketing of solar water heating system. And on this, the energy efficiency campaign strategy has been completed and was signed off from the NetLeg side in December 2011. And currently, the process is to mobilize resources from various organizations, donors, like all those who are playing a role within the solar water heating program value chain. Okay, in terms of the localization, particularly in relation to the localization value chain, the designation study that I'm referring to, DTI, the Department of Trade and Industry, together with IDC, has appointed a service provider to undertake a solar water heating designation study. And the objective is to designate the industry or certain solar water products in terms of the PPPFA. This would assist us in terms of looking at all the solar water heater products or components on the status within the country. How much can be manufactured within the country? How much is currently being imported? And how do we get to a point where we should say a specific percentage would be localized within the country? The study is anticipated to be completed in June. An inception report in this regard has already been issued. And on the funding models for the program, IDC, DBSA, together with ESCOM, has been exploring various funding models in an effort to get the most appropriate funding model for both low-pressure and high-pressure systems. And IDC has confirmed that it has already funded to the tune of approximately $150 million to the industry in support of the sector. Maybe just to go back, in terms of this program, after realizing that there is a need to work together, there is a project steering committee that is led by the Economic Development Department, where we get together and report progress in terms of our roles and responsibilities. It's not only the Department of Energy that is contributing towards the solar water heating program. And on accreditation and training, Department of Education is taking a lead in making sure or collaborating with the CITAS to ensure that all work that is done within the value chain is accredited and according to the accreditation requirements. And they are also reporting in terms of how far have we gone. In terms of training, is to ensure that people are trained according to the FAQA requirements. Maybe one of the things through the project steering committee that one can allude to is progress in terms of the things that need to be finalized soon before the end of April, as we need to be getting to the rollout of the unit. It's to the PSC needs to decide in terms of how the allocated funding would be used, taking into account all of the localization issues, the actual installation in terms of the low pressure and the high pressure system, as well as the challenges that have already presented themselves. Like if you go back in terms of the water quality issues, that doesn't fall within the mandate of Department of Energy, but it falls within the mandate of Department of Water Affairs. But how do we get them on board in making sure that the necessary processes are taken into account so that it doesn't, hinder progress on the program? Identification of beneficiaries is also one of the things that work is currently in progress. Though we have already noted that, from the current figure in terms of provincial spread, it already shows that other provinces are lagging behind. So we're trying to get to the bottom of why are they so low on the graph or in terms of taking off on solar water geysers. So with the current allocation, the Department of Energy would sign a service level agreement with ESCOM in terms of the rollout. I need to highlight that, we have already received like some queries in terms of why do we prefer ESCOM versus the municipalities. It's not a matter of preference. It's a matter of, looking at the challenges that we have already experienced. We are acknowledging that within ESCOM there is capacity, there is skill as compared to the current challenges when it comes to human capital within the municipalities. If you compare within the municipalities, we have managed to roll out, 24,000 with a slow pace as compared to the scale and the pace that ESCOM has taken so far. And also one of the things that we're looking at is the possible solution in terms of making sure that the program is CDM aligned in terms of maintenance and sustainability as well. It was a clean development mechanism to make sure that the carbon credits, through this program can generate revenue to the country as well. And through the PSC, it has been confirmed, that the rebate program would continue until September, but there is still a discussion in terms of whether should we continue with the rebate program or move to the contract kind of model, those decisions have not been taken, but the PSC is working on them. And also continuation of new registration for the low pressure system rollout by ESCOM. So this is the budget for the next 3 years. The program has been allocated $4.7 billion, with the current financial year having $1 billion. On the $1 billion, that's what the PSC currently is working on, having taken into account that initially the allocated funds would mostly go to the actual installation, but there are other commitments like localization that would still require, I mean, attention within the current allocation. That's what the PSC is working on to finalize the funding model and how the rollout would look like, because it has taken a slight shift in terms of what we used to have. I guess Andrew would add on what I've just indicated. And the last slide, in terms of we requesting the portfolio committee to note progress and the challenges that have been encountered and how they have been resolved, and also to take note of the cumulative target that was set of 250,000 units, that at the moment we are at 964 units. Also taking into account that there are reports that are outstanding, the figure might slightly change a bit based on the work that has been done during December, during the COP period. And also the portfolio committee to note that the budget allocated to achieve, I mean, the outstanding 1 million solar water units for 2014-2015 is $4.7 billion. And also commitments already made through the Green Economy Accord, that they are being factored in through, I mean, this program, particularly looking at the localization issues to create more jobs and the work that has already been undertaken in that regard. For the portfolio committee to note that work is in progress with all stakeholders to intensify the operationalization of all identified key factors to localization. And also to note energy savings, which will be improved through penetration of high-end market through the standard offer model. And that would be it. Thanks. I would request Andrew maybe to add before the questions are asked, if maybe there is any.
I like the last part. Andrew's not going to defend himself on that scabbing. And don't say if there are any questions. You know, we always have tons of questions. Okay, Mr. Andrew, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, we do have a presentation from ESCOM, which I would be glad to present to the committee. I can confirm, as Mohadi has said, that there's a perfect synergy between the DOE and ESCOM, and that we're effectively operating as the agent of the Department of Energy in terms of the implementing agent. And as such, there is an unavoidable amount of duplication within the presentation, but I'll skip over those sections where there is duplication. Okay, I wonder if I could then... Thanks, Mohadi. Maybe it's better. Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry about that. Chairperson, the handouts of the presentation have been made available to members, I believe. So the first slide deals with the difference between the low-pressure systems and high-pressure systems. So when we talk about low-pressure systems, we're talking about solar water heaters which are installed in homes where the water is fed by gravity through from the system through to the home. So this would be not a high-pressure system, and these systems are used when you're not replacing a geyser. So in many homes in South Africa, as we know, there are no geysers, and then the low-pressure system is suitable for that application and does come at a lower cost than the high-pressure system. So for a low-pressure system, you'd be looking at approximately 5,000 Rand for an installation. High-pressure systems, very different. This is where you're placing a geyser in the home, and the water pressure in the system is completely different. Of course, there's pressure in the water pipes. It is a more expensive system, and on average, a home would pay about 15,000 to 20,000 Rand for a high-pressure system. At the moment, we have a rebate program which is available to both the low-pressure systems and the high-pressure systems. In the case of the low-pressure systems, the rebate paid is enough to fully fund the cost of installation of a system, whereas in the case of high-pressure systems, we pay approximately 25% of the cost of installation, and the homeowner needs to pay the balance. Bukhari has explained the uptake of the program in terms of the statistics. Year by year, we can see that certainly, as Bukhari explained, that up until 2010, we saw a very low uptake, and in 2010, towards the second half, we accelerated the program dramatically, and in 2011, that trend has continued. We would expect that in 2012, once again, that we would exceed the 2011 number, that we would finish on about 180,000, and that would be the appropriate number of systems which would match the 1 billion Rand allocation for solar water heating in the coming financial year. The slide presents the numbers which Mohadi has already presented, so Chair, in the interest of time, I would step off, other than to once again repeat that we are just at about 250,000 systems towards the government target of 1 million, so we are well on track. There are 650 registered companies participating in the program to obviously lesser or greater extents. This graph is identical to the graph which Mohadi showed earlier, showing the division of the solar water heaters amongst the various provinces. The provinces which are lagging would be lagging because of the lack of suppliers in the area, plus in certain cases the quality of the water or the hardness of the water makes it difficult to install solar water heaters, as Mohadi has explained. The issue of moving away from the rebate program towards a contract route is intended to address this. So we will be placing contracts for specific installations in specific provinces. This gives us the control ability that we need in order to redress the situation. Certain lessons have certainly been learnt over the rollout that we've done over the first 250,000 systems. First being that electricity savings are low in relation to cost. We started out the solar water heating program as a way of saving electricity. Of course, there are a number of other benefits, but what we have seen is that the electricity savings are reasonably low. When you replace a geyser, the savings are high, but in homes which didn't have geysers originally, of course, the savings are going to be low. So the benefit of the program in terms of job creation and service delivery in those instances outweighs the electricity savings. Secondly, the quality of installations has not always been up to standard, and in many cases we've needed to insist on rework. As Mohadi explained, this is a program which needs active management. It needs strong project management in order to guide installers and suppliers to quality, to good and rigorous quality standards. So this is not an easy program to roll out. The third is that rigorous process controls are required, particularly because we are talking about enormous sums of funds, the 4.7 billion made available by government. Every single cent must be correctly accounted for. A number of systems being rolled out, I've mentioned 650 participants, so it does take rigorous controls to make sure that that we stay on track. We would be looking in future for contracts for ongoing maintenance for the low-pressure systems. It is not good enough to simply ask suppliers for guarantees. We actually want in future to provide financial incentives for the maintenance to make sure that, that contractors and installers stick to their commitments in terms of ongoing maintenance. The last is that safety is non-negotiable. We have found many instances where safety standards are violated in terms of simple things such as not wearing helmets, not hooking up to firm structures when working at heights, etc. We find people just simply walking on roofs without harnesses, etc. So the contract route again gives the agent, in this case Eskom, the ability to insist and enforce safety requirements. In terms of the way forward, Chair, as has been mentioned, we would be on the low pressure side. The low pressure system is replacing the rebate program with a contracting approach, which would give the following benefits to the program. Firstly, from the perspective of government, the issue of job creation and sustainability, the triple BEE, supply, development and localization, the equitable share between provinces, set aside for co-ops, support for disadvantaged groups and communities, and certainty that targets will be met. These objectives, as stated by government, can be explicitly met through a contracting approach. We don't have to hope for the best. We'd simply place contracts with those as specific criteria within the tender adjudication rules. The second is that from the perspective of solar water heater suppliers and installers, what this would provide would be predictability and certainty and finance. At the moment on the rebate program, the rebate isn't a bankable document. A solar water heater manufacturer cannot easily get finance on the basis that he or she is participating in the rebate program. But if there's a contract, a binding contract from the agent, that is totally different. A bank will finance that. And that's when the market participants makes the contract route a much more attractive option. From the implementing agent and from the perspective of Eskom, it will make it easier to instill and enforce rigorous controls and governance to ensure quality installations, to ensure system sustainability, and as mentioned before, to ensure safety. For Eskom contractors, we're very, very strict with safety. So basically, through the contract routes, suppliers and installers would be Eskom contractors and would be subject to Eskom's own rigorous safety standards. The rollout targets, Chair, in the next slide are not intended to be gone through in detail other than to indicate over the period up until the end of 2014, it's really up until the end of March 2015, the rollout of intended rollout of the low pressure and the high pressure systems towards the goal of 1 million systems by that time. So the allocations have been done, the funds have been allocated by National Treasury and through the steering committee, inter-ministerial steering committee, as Mohadi has indicated, we will make sure that this happens. There are a number of parameters for the rollout. And we've gone through these parameters within the steering committee, and these slides are intended to really give feedback. So the green text indicates the preference of the committee that in terms of contracting routes, we will place separate contracts for the manufacturing and for the installation of systems. This will allow us to make sure that, especially for the small, medium, and micro enterprises on the installation side, we are able to provide a free issue of solar water heaters to those companies, and they will be able to do their work without needing a big balance sheet. In terms of the methodology for contract allocation, our recommendation would be to an open tender. We would certainly, within the areas of municipalities, work together with SOLGA, and we'd make sure that the tender criteria specify that local labor and workforce is to be used. In terms of allocations of the systems, there we would be taking strong guidance from the Department of Energy, but there would be, in those cases, designated communities and co-ops which are specified by the Department of Energy where we would roll out. So we wouldn't just leave it as a blanket, an open checkbook per province. The localization, what we would do would be to specify the minimum amount of localization in a solar water heater as a gatekeeper tender process. So the intention is to be very strong, and for those systems which do not meet the minimum levels of local content, they will simply not be allowed onto the program in the contract route. In terms of the sustainability of the systems, as has been mentioned, we would certainly want to make sure that systems are correctly installed, and we would be leveraging the CDM revenues, as Mahari has explained. We would also be looking at basic contracts for system maintenance, and we would be from the suppliers or the manufacturers requiring guarantees and provisions in the case of any defects arising after installation. Okay, the next slide provides an overview of the systems the system requirement that we would be specifying. Very important here that SABS mark approval would be required. We want to make sure that at the moment we are requiring that systems be SABS tested. In the future, we would want these systems actually to have a mark of approval, once again, to make sure that the quality is there. The last point, the water quality within acceptable parameters. Again, we must make sure that we don't repeat the experience of Naledi where we started and needed to stop. We'd make sure that all water is tested before we install it in an area. The installers would have the scope of work as one would expect, but within that, we would just point out that the training and skills development is absolutely key. An installer would be required to make sure that 70% of the workforce is drawn from the local community. We'd also want a call center to be established and to be operated by the supplier over a period of 5 years. Chairman, that brings me to the end of my presentation. As Hardy said, we'd be, of course, answer any questions that are asked. Thank you.
To be surprised that you've finished. Thank you very much, Andrew. Honorable members, there you are. Questions? Member Tivela, Mehreding, Edislav.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see here Limpopo is very, very, very low. Very. And the reason is it not because there's no water that you can't install solar water cases, because our Limpopo is most rural and most municipalities don't have water. The other one is when you say you are going to localize the workforce and all this, are you also going to localize the manufacturers? Thank you.
Let's take all the questions, just record them. Honorable Freddy.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I have a number of questions. I'm obviously very interested in this program, and the feedback I've received from some solar water heater manufacturers is that Eskom has tried its best and that you have been limited by the available funds that have been put to you, but that you've actually run quite a good program in terms of that. The problems that I foresee in this whole program at the moment, though, is there's a couple of them. The one is, as you say, the kind of energy savings we're getting at the moment are not very large, because we've tended to concentrate on the low-pressure systems. Now, there's important kind of socioeconomic reasons why we do that, but even looking at some of the programs, I went to Uitenhage, where they had a big rollout. Now, there seems to be major problems with that, linked to, firstly, corruption around people having to sign up and getting paid 200 rand to sign up a person to put in that solar water system, linked to problems in the community telling me the water's all flowing out, and so they pay more on water bills, all of those kinds of things. And it seems to be a major problem around that kind of rollout, which we need to address. But clearly the major problem to me, though, is that we haven't been able to significantly increase the amount of high-pressure systems that we've put into the system. And this is what we need to look at. And I think that when I look at the figures here, you talk about 800,000 low-pressure systems by 2014 and only 200,000 high-pressure systems by that date. Now, I understand part of the reasoning for that. The problem is that we're firstly not going to meet our energy saving targets on what we initially envisaged around the solar water heater program if we only concentrate on 200,000 high pressure systems. And I think that that needs to be looked at. The other problem is that most of these low pressure systems, as far as I can see, unless we've addressed this, is imported from China. You know, and that the actual manufacturing capacity in South Africa is around the high pressure systems. And that, in fact, we had this perverse situation last year, which I'm sure you know about, where some of these companies are closing down because they're saying that the demand for the high pressure system has not significantly increased, and they've increased their capacity to produce them, and now they're going bankrupt, some of these companies. So clearly what we should be doing, I think, is looking far more at how do we significantly upscale the high-pressure systems, you know, in terms of our manufacturing capacity, in terms of our energy savings, in terms of our costs. That is where the focus should be on. I understand we need to roll out to poorer communities. Sometimes poorer communities don't even want it. That's what I was yearning you tonight, you know. This is costing me more in water. This thing is flowing out there. We don't know who to call. We don't, you know, so there's major problems we have to address on that front as well. But clearly we have to fix the high-pressure system. Now, my understanding of this problem as well is that this is mainly, it's not an economic problem. It's a financing problem. And that one of the reasons why I think the middle class is not buying into it is that they don't want to spend, outlay 15,000 Rand up front to put a system in when they don't see a major need to do so. Whereas, in fact, if you tell them that that upfront cost will be covered and they'll only have to pay back 300 Rand a month and that they'll save that in their energy, in the electricity bills anyway, then it's a far more attractive option for the middle class. And so maybe we should be looking at more innovative financing schemes that can actually bring the middle class in here and say, we are prepared now to actually go ahead on this, because clearly we're not getting that rollout that we desired around that. And I'll be interested to hear what your comments are in terms of how we can address that particular issue. Thanks.
No, I thought I was still following the queue. So I met you yesterday. I met with some guys from Sanedi who alluded to the fact that the quality of work in this rollout is low. And this morning I was in a meeting with trade and industry, and they confirmed. And they say the reason has been that in the beginning of this process, people went for cheaper things but low quality. But besides, there is no maintenance plan to say if it breaks or it leaks, what then? So a lot of work is done with good intentions, as the chairperson always says, without anticipating unintended consequences. And we have that as a problem. It's a challenge now. How do you intend to deal with that situation? There's reference in the department presentation of hard water. I'm not sure if I'm clear of what is hard water. What does hard water mean? What makes it hard? Okay. No? And reference was made to the ruralness of the provinces and the awareness. I'm not sure what that means, that an awareness campaign must be made into these rural provinces. Awareness of what? And how will the awareness help the problem? You know, if there is a problem in the rural area. But I do, and I might be wrong, I do smell something that says the water in the rural areas, it's hard water with all the kinds of contamination. And water in the urban areas is fine, then you can be able to do that. And what makes the difference? What stops you from making this water look the same? I will not take an argument that says because there's no tax base in the rural areas. I will not take that argument. It doesn't suffice. You have already responded to the meaning of lower pressure and higher pressure, and I will not go over to that area. There's reference also to the issues related to SITA. You know, these SITAs, I'm not sure. Are they still there? Do we still have the Sector Education and Training Authority? Are they still working? I don't remember now lately hearing that there was some particular course taken or some particular training going on anywhere by the SITAs. But I would also wish to know what your relationship is with the IPP that has just presented before you came in. And I must say that ESCOM, in your presentation, you have also alluded to the fact of the quality of installations. But this is reference to installation. It's not necessarily the quality of the, because there's a difference between the quality of work and the quality of product. That product, in terms of the heaters themselves. On your page seven, I'm not sure what slide you'd call that, under the key parameters of future rollout. You're making reference to the minimum level of local content in systems. I'm not sure if you're saying that's what we are agreeing upon. I think we are agreeing to the maximum local content. Our wish could be that everything should be 100% locally made and not minimum. Okay, sure. Thanks.
Yeah, Baba Smala. Yes, Chair, I'll talk to the first document, and sorry for leaving the room. I had to take an important call. I would like to understand that when you do, from the department, when you, or maybe ESCOM, when you do roll out these programs, is there some sort of an EI study being done to determine, as you said, the quality of water and to determine the success of your actual project, that you actually don't go into an expense and then really find out that these things hasn't happened? Yes, you did start now, roll out your first few, but I'm just worried about the other projects in the past, or, you know, and how you got there. Am I right to say that on your low pressure cost wise, I'm just trying to understand why the discrepancy of about 2,000 rand per unit between probably, maybe it's rural or rural urban, I'm not so sure, between Tswane and Stella Freyberg and Solplike. So I just did a quick cost analysis between the numbers. It works about 7,000 rand to a unit for the for Stella and Naledi and Solplike, and for Tswane it works at about 4,000 rand. I mean 4,900 rand per unit for cost. Just trying to understand the discrepancy, why that discrepancy concerning numbers base. When you looked at your various problem solving solutions, and you looked at the breakdown of your solutions to, especially into the reservoirs. I'm trying to understand that when you find out all these problems with the water and the quality of the water, now this is water that's already into a reservoir and that has got problems into that probably needs to verify gets to a filter system. How does that affect the drinking water of the actual? Would you then say that the drink, let me put it in that phrase, would you then say that the water that is then available in those areas where you did these checks, these five, is in one way or another then contaminated in some parts? Because I'm looking at bacteria, I'm just looking at that in order for that to work, you need to remove all these viruses, bacteria, all ions, and these things needs to be done. I'm just trying to understand the logic beyond what you've said here and what I'm reading. Trying to read beyond the scenes of if there's a bigger problem of not probably energy, but maybe something else. Your programs that you're running, especially I'm looking at where the feasibility studies are being undertaken. 11, 12, are you expecting the completion in the next financial year of the rollout of the programs? And what are the maintenance of those issues? Because I recall a conversation in this very room where the department spoke to, or maybe could have been ESCOM, concerning that there were four service providers that are responsible for various maintenance at various various areas. I'm just trying to understand who's responsible for the maintenance, what are the type of contracts that are that you are getting into with these service providers long term, what sort of assurance are you requesting from these service providers, and the present situation where you already done your 244,000 units, what is the state of affairs concerning the maintenance regarding those presently? How are you dealing with it? Are there difficulties? And do you need to do things differently for your next million, getting to your next million?
What strikes me is the weakness in Rural Hinterland. The man who said Rural municipalities. Something worth noting. You think of jobs being created. Is there any situation whereby you find that jobs ideally targeted are usually less than those who are created? Because I thought this would be a little bit of a cut and dry situation. You may not respond now, but the utilization of CDM, I would like you to make sure that when Seth Carbon comes, they highlight how they propose to contribute to this, because that's one of the key company within government. Of course, I see it more also appropriate as one of the funding models. But just on funding models, I haven't heard you rambling about the role of provincial and municipal entities. Jay,
SATA, FTC, ECDC. It's only IDC at the top. And my question is, what about the provincial one, the WASCRO? You know, LIMDEF, MEG, I think it's MEG in Bumala. Yeah, MEGA, you see. In some of the municipalities, you have entities. From time to time, reference are made to insurance, so your comment would be helpful. Last week, I invited both ESCOM and the department on the same thing in the constituency. And one of the things that came out very strongly is the need for monitoring the rollout at that level. Because to quite an extent, what we discovered that we actually preempted something where private companies just went to councillors. Because of this level, I began to realize that actually I do not know, honorable members, how this is rolled out, you know, in detail. So I just decided to pull in both the department and ESCOM just to explain to us. And it became clear that we were almost at a risk of taking a company for a project or a program that's going to, the whose character is going to end up pretty soon. So the issue of monitoring at local level, I'm just resonating and reconfirming, it's very, very, very important. That links with the accreditation, as we're seeing some of the governments going to be re-registered because of the issue of quality. Briefing by the designation study, let's make a deal, Monisu, right now, third term. The committee secretary is listening. We'll pick up a date on the third term. Because I assume by then, honorable members, it would have gone through the cabinet. It's very, very important that we have a sense. I mean, let me appeal. This is one of the areas that we really need to monitor pretty closely. Of course, I take into account other things that have been raised as well. Another failing, whilst I take your point, and I think also we need to handle the issue of high pressure versus low pressure systems in the context of the Green Economy Accord, EPAP. We may have to work with the other committees, pull in back IDC and staff as well, something to see how they are robustly engaging in that. But I would like to end to what you have said of the low national uptake on high pressure systems to also be caused by probably low awareness campaign. And in that case, I'd like to hear from this lady and gentleman as to the extent to which they are planning awareness campaign. Thank you for now. Over to you. Oh, yes. Let me reinforce the Honorable Smiley's EIA. I'm very keen to hear that as well. Is it part of the previous feasibility study?
Okay, thanks. In terms of the first question was on Limpopo. I mean, uptake being very, very low, and whether is it because of the water scarcity or is it because of the rural, part of the province. I would say, Andrew would comment from the high-pressure system side. From the low-pressure side, the fiscal minister, we didn't support any. So only in the current financial year, that's where we have Musina coming in. So, and I must say the rural, special development do contribute, because I can confirm that in most areas they still don't understand, the benefit of solar water heating. The interest is still very low as compared to the awareness that is there when you get to the urban areas. Exposure do play a role. So those are the things that we're looking at. So from the fiscal side, financial resources are not enough. You can see we only doing 3 municipalities at a go. And if you were to spread, the current allocation to many municipalities, you wouldn't have enough units, because, 54 million gives us only 7,000 units. So if you were to divide it by many municipalities, you would talk about a small number of municipalities. The issue around financial resources has gone up, has been escalated, hence the current allocation is even better than the previous years. Hence, you see we have, 1 billion that was escalated to the ministerial level. In terms of the localization part, the localization is not only looking at the whole value chain of solar water heating process. It will also include, the manufacturing. The designation, study that we're referring to is looking at the potential in terms of, job creation at all points, leading to the actual installation. So the study would assist us in terms of looking at the current capacity within, South Africa. What are we importing? What are the capabilities within the country? What is it within various components of a geyser or a heater? Can we manufacture locally? At what percentage? If we are stretched, to the limit, up to what capacity can we keep up with the demand? So that would include the manufacturing part of it as well. There is a question in terms of the low-pressure system versus the high-pressure system that we need to increase the appetite. Andrew would agree to this. Yesterday, we were debating the issue at project steering committee level to say we understand the fact that the program is also supporting the social economic component, the social part of our government objectives, but we should not forget that our 2008, situation has to be addressed. And if we were to address that in depth, we need to up the number in terms of high pressure system. So those are the things that the PSCC still need to decide on. It was a hotly debated issue in terms of are we saying job creation more versus the high pressure system, and how do we deal with the issue around high pressure system versus the low pressure system. I think in the next brief we would be in a position to give a detailed discussion in terms of how has it been dealt with. It was resolved that it needs to be escalated to the DGs of the key role players, National Treasury, DOE, EDD, Trade and Industry, because those are the key role players on the value system. But the issue around the high-pressure system is key in terms of how we're rolling out this 4.7 billion. Yes, on the... Honorable Krillen indicated that most of the low-pressure system, are imported from China, and South Africa is mostly manufacturing the high-pressure system. I think that I would request Andrew to deal with it. Most of the questions, Andrew would be in a better position to answer it. I would comment on some of them because mostly are more at implementation level.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Makhadi. We'll share the questions this afternoon. The issue of Limpopo, if I could add to what Makhadi was saying, is that what is essential is, Honourable Member, is that there must be running water in a home for a solar water heater to work, and I think that is, to your point, I think that's exactly the issue, that the number of homes where there's running water, and I was in Tafelkop on Friday, and that's exactly the issue. Even Khosi, the chief, does not have running water in his house. So that is definitely a barrier to rolling it out. In terms of local manufacturing, as Makhadi has explained, Honourable Member Utenag, I'm aware of the issue. I think the subtle issue here is that by moving to a contract approach, it gives us ultimate control over those situations. What happens is that an installer will go and install in Utenag or somewhere. They will submit claims to us. We will reject the claims because of quality, but the fact is there's still poor systems on the roof, and that's what the contracting route allows us to do. It allows us to proactively specify an area and manage that situation, not just simply reject the reject claims. If I can just pick up on your other question as to how exactly the maintenance works, et cetera. The requirement to participate on our rebate program is that a supplier, an installer, must maintain a system for 5 years. The system installers at the moment have gone back and have repaired the systems in cases where there has been poor workmanship. So up until now it's worked, but certainly to be locked tight, we must move to a contracting route where there is ongoing payments for maintenance over. There must be a revenue stream into the future. That's what will get us there. In terms of I think even the electrical geysers last for 5 years in South Africa. That's how they're made. So we want to make sure that they last longest. That doesn't only apply to solar water heating. Generally, you do see a degradation. The biggest, and I think it's perhaps would be worth noting, that more than half of the low-pressure systems have been installed by a single supplier who've registered their installations on a carbon program over 10 years. So they have a 10-year revenue stream. We've seen good maintenance programs being put in place. So it's very important, as Mukhari said, that in addition to what we're doing on the maintenance contracting side, that the carbon program must be leveraged to make sure that you keep what basically means is you have to keep those systems running for a period of 10 years in order to derive the revenue coming through from their carbon program. So that's very, very key. And I'd say for more than half our systems on the program are on the carbon on the carbon route, so we're very happy about that. Right. In terms of the high-pressure systems and why the low rollout, as the members correctly indicated, Honourable Member indicated the difference between finance and economics, and that's exactly what it is. It hits the pocket of a middle-income homeowner to still make up the difference of the 15,000 rand. That's exactly it. The payback period is long on a solar water heater as compared to other technology. There's a heat pump technology which is coming, which has really taken off. So heat pumps are, in most cases, able to give the same amount of savings as a solar water heater, but at half the price. So we actually need to look at both in terms of energy-efficient water heating, not just solar water heating. And we need to see that solar water heating is falling behind heat pumps on the high-pressure side. The Honourable Member mentioned the issue of local content production capacity. On the low-pressure side, it's in fact slightly different. On the low-pressure side, there's more than enough production capacity to produce a millions of these systems a year. There are massive factories which are being put up in South Africa. And in fact, the challenge is to say, how do you keep those factories busy if you're only doing a million over 3 years? Because there are four or five factories who probably each one of them could produce a million over that period of time. So what we're finding, though, is, and the Honourable Member is quite right, that we've seen on the high-pressure side the smaller installations coming under great pressure, particularly in the Western Cape, where there are, and I think there's two closures that I'm aware of, and a third is a switch to importing products simply because the lack of, well, it's a case now of a number of participants in the industry being split. And as I mentioned, we've got 650 suppliers. Now, if you're dividing a cake between 650, it is putting a lot of pressure on the local manufacturers. This will be addressed through the contracting route. That's why we want to go that way. The contracting route will specify local. We want to move away from imported products and make sure that we support the local suppliers. In terms of the comments by Sinedi, Honourable Member, I can agree with what Sinedi said, and I would also, in terms of looking at the difference between manufacture and installation, I would quite concur. In fact, I think the slide was inaccurate. It really is the case that we would need to make sure that both the manufacturing as well as the installation quality is up to standard. What is important to note, though, is that the minimum requirements, quality requirements from SABS in certain cases are not sufficient to ensure five-year sustainability, and we have to specify in the contracting route once again more than the minimum SABS requirements in terms of thickness of steel, etc., particularly in areas with hard water. I'll come to the hard water issue now. Okay, so in terms of how to deal with the maintenance requirements, up until now the vast majority of suppliers have been diligent in terms of doing the maintenance. If that were not the case, that we would certainly step in. We have appointed SABS for the 250,000 systems which have been done. SABS will be assisting us with the inspections together with the other institutions, with certain local governments are working together with us already to make sure that we track those on an ongoing basis. So we're not leaving. We specifically appointed SABS and we have a contract with SABS to make sure that we go back and we understand exactly what's happening with those 250,000 systems which we'd want. But again, the answer is going forward to place formal contracts for maintenance with the installers. If I could talk about page 7, and I must admit, I see the grammar on the slide is totally incorrect. It's just a matter of interpretation, when I look at it cold, I can see the honourable member's concern. On page 7, on slide, I guess on slide 14, the point 4, where it says minimum level of local content in systems, what was meant here, and I apologise to the member, what was meant was we will specify a minimum level. You have to be above that level. So we will say, that we have to be above a certain minimum, not to minimise it, but I understand it's a grammatical error. Certainly we agree with Honourable Chair that we want to be at 100%. But there are certain components of a solar water heater which we realistically can't produce in South Africa. On the low pressure side, there's what's called a vacuum tube. These are those glass tubes that simply cannot be produced. And so what we're saying there is that we would allow the vacuum tubes to be imported from China. That's where they're produced globally. But as for the rest of the system, we would want that to be produced locally in South Africa. The glass tubes, Chair, Honourable Member, there are a number of companies who are doing feasibility studies at the moment to establish a tube factory in South Africa. So there is in fact two components to a tube, and the outside component can be manufactured at the inside component. So even looking at the component level of a tube, certain components could be produced locally, others imported. So even at a tube level, we will make sure it's not just a tube. We will say within the tube, certain components of the tube must be local. So we'll certainly get there, Chairman. In terms of the quality of the water, all future studies will make sure that we do the water assessment, the assessment of the quality of the water. Honourable Member, I don't know about the implications of heavy metals in water. I can't actually speak as to whether there's any health issues, but I must say this has nothing to do with bacteria or waterborne diseases. That's not what makes it hot. So in terms of the long-term effects of heavy minerals, I'm not qualified to talk about that, but hard water is not really so much an issue of quality of the water as in good quality versus bad. Coastal areas, you'll have soft water up here just because of the path that water takes through rocks and the absorbed minerals makes it hard. It's not dirty water, it's not inferior water, it's just hard water, and the result of that is that it erodes a tank, a metal cylinder, quicker than soft water does.
Minerals in that, like you would realize when we boil water, there would be a white crust, accumulating over time in the kettle. So the element to some extent, with time, is no longer working. So with the geyser, it's the same thing. If the mineral percentage is just too high, with time, that crust reduces the efficiency in terms of the functionality of the geyser. But it has got nothing to do with bacteria or viruses. Like normally in some areas you would say the water is salty, it's because of the minerals, the taste, like you feel that, I mean, it's the salt is just too much. Those are just minerals.
Thank you, Mohadi. In terms of the job creation versus what has been desired, I can report that our numbers in terms of the jobs that have been created thus far in the program is 1,500 jobs. Obviously, this we'd look to increase this as the funding comes through for the full extent of the rollout, but at the moment we're at 1,500 jobs having been created. The utilization of the CDM, Chairman, most definitely, I think this is where SA Inc. must work together to make sure that the SIF Carbon and IDC have a carbon program as well, is leveraged. I'm very impressed, let me speak personally, with the way that that the IDC at the moment have leveraged that carbon. They have made that carbon funding available to the supplier, who has in turn used that funding to set up their maintenance program and is run. That, so the program, I can see, is running very well. So it can actually work well and makes a material difference to the program. The provincial structures, what we have identified is that SALGA in particular have not really been involved with the program to the extent that they should be. So we acknowledge that we would need to work more closely with regional structures. SALGA has been invited to join the steering committee, the PSC. So I think through the mechanisms, the formal mechanisms of government, we will make sure that those are closed. In terms of ease of monitoring at a local level, I think there are monitoring programs in certain areas. Certainly, Debbie mentioned that in Eskom, we have got a national footprint of what we refer to as energy advisors who are able to undertake that monitoring, so it is done. But in addition to that, as I said, we have appointed SEABS just to make sure that we close the loop and make sure that SEABS, who are of course well aware of the relevant standards, etc., are there to provide independent assessments for us as well. In terms of, Chairman, the awareness program on soil water heating, we've had a program and we continue to run adverts on in the newspaper, on radio, etc., on solar water heating, but it isn't at a point where we have achieved a mass uptake of solar water heating. So that is quite that point is conceded. On television, what we're doing at the moment from Eskom's perspective is looking at outlawing the electrical geyser, and there would be the members may have seen the television adverts which we've put out, which are basically saying that the electric geyser is bad. This will be followed up by a second phase of that campaign to say that solar water heaters and heat pumps are good, so they'll be welcome in the home. If you've seen it, like a geyser knocks on your front door and they're chased away. An honourable member is smiling. He's obviously seen it. Okay, it's the same concept. So basically, the way our campaign runs will be to say, you know, outlaw geyser, electric geyser is not welcome, and then the next phase will be welcome to the solar water heater. So we're trying to move away from a numbers-based argument, rather appeal to emotion and a bit of humour, etc., to get it going. So that we will do, but again, the underlying issue is one of finance and the ability of the homeowner to fund that. But that is where we're working together with the insurance industry. We're estimating that 100,000 high-pressure systems could be installed through the insurance industry, who would undertake approximately 200,000 repairs every year for burst geysers. So those discussions have gone well, and we hope to launch shortly with a pilot phase with the insurance industry through their overall umbrella body.
Just to add on the campaign part of it, Honorable Sly asked how would, I mean, the campaign assist this program. I mean, mostly in rural areas, they boil water through either kettle. I mean, it consumes electricity consumption is high, and like for them to understand that the solar, you get it for free. Once you have the unit, then it means it reduces your electricity consumption. That would help. Hence, we're saying in terms of energy efficiency, it should be a responsibility for each and every citizen. I mean, to explore all or to take advantage of all the energy efficiency initiatives. So in the case where they are aware that the solar geysers, including other energy efficiency initiatives, would reduce the electricity consumption, that would add value in terms of reducing the load in terms of the demand as well.
Guys, that foot is not ours, and there are people waiting there. So if you could wrap up. The other people who are coming in to use this.
Okay, so there was a question in terms of the sitters. Are they still there? Are they still working? We have got Department of Education and Training as part of the project steering committee in addressing the issues of skills development and transfer. Department of Education has been engaging the sitters. They are there. They are working. It's just that maybe it took time before they were on board. At the moment, they would be part of the skills development in terms of closing the gap.
Chairman, if I might briefly come to...
Yeah, Colleen?
There is a question as well in terms of whether this program included the EIA process. Remember, in terms of the EIA process, this program is not a listed activity. So we're doing the feasibility study and making sure that all the requirements are met. So an EIA is not conducted, just the feasibility process.
Chairman, I was asked whether Eskom is in any form of relationship with the IPP from Exxaro, which had presented before the solar water heating. What I can confirm is that certainly Eskom has come a long way with Exxaro and is aware of Exxaro's ambitious plans. Our approach from Eskom is to say that we know that Eskom cannot meet the future electricity demands alone. It takes partnership, and we've said that we would gladly work together with independent power producers. I can confirm that Eskom has established what we refer to as a grid access unit, which aims to put in place the required infrastructure to link IPPs to the national grid, and where there are power purchase agreements, to make sure that those are properly set up and properly executed. So yes, we are in a positive relationship with Exxaro, both as a customer and a supplier.
Okay, there is a question from the chair in terms of in the presentation we're talking about IDC. What about the other financiers? I need to highlight the point that, as Andrew indicated initially, the model that we were, using in terms of rebates, the financiers were not attracted because of the high risk, but the contracting model would definitely attract the financial institutions, including, IDC.
Okay. Last question before the show.
Chairman, this is not even a question, just to put on record a point. I have made a study here and found that the three provinces are coastal provinces, and the one province, which is Gauteng, is the only one that is not a coastal province from those whose performance is good in terms of this installation process. And the provinces, the four provinces surrounding Gauteng, are very good agricultural provinces, which may not be looked at as having really that bad salty water that can prevent them from there. Yes, we do understand the problem in Limpopo, which is a problem of time, of course. As soon as the dams are ready and water is able to be taken into the places, that would be fine. But therefore, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest, I do not really agree with the issue that these salts that are found everywhere, because the water in Gauteng has got a similar salt. The water everywhere has got a similar salt. That these provinces cannot really be assisted because of that reason. It may be worse off in certain areas, but it can't be in the whole of those things. I know that areas around Mafeking up here, including Frederick, have got a lot of lime underneath, and that lime might perhaps be, in a way, creating that thing. But as you move more towards Gauteng from Mafikeng, you get, I don't know what you call, clay. You get a lot of clay in terms of the soil there, and which therefore says the water is much better. Why not focusing on those areas, then, at least? And I'm not convinced that we should treat provinces like this. You know, South Africa has got three main provinces, and the fourth one being Eastern Cape, not really. But your Gauteng, your KZN, and this province are always the best, and they are in terms of this getting the best, followed by the Eastern Cape, and the rest of them will then get the crumbs. I can't take that, Shepherd. I'm just putting it on record.
No. There are people there. We can't be unfair to them.
Yeah.
We can't be unfair to those people. ESCOM and the department, thank you very much. This obviously is not the last time we're meeting you. Should there be any follow-up questions from the members, I would encourage that through the committee secretary, they can submit them. Thanks very much for the meeting. Thanks a lot.